This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so they'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where this evening I'm going to spend a half an hour discussing issues related to the Second Amendment, and the rest of the show, an hour and a half, will be a most interesting interview I had with John Friend. I want to begin with the Second Amendment because issues are heating up in the political arena, where several of the Republican candidates are coming out strongly against gun control. Whereas Hillary Clinton, widely regarded as the leading candidate for the Democratic nomination, has asserted that when she becomes president, if Congress won't pass laws, she will do it by executive action, which in fact has been echoed by her predecessor, should be she become the next president of the United States, Barack Obama, who's already been writing executive orders to control guns one after another after another, all predicated on false flag attacks like Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, the Charleston shooting, this latest Oregon event. And now today, I learn that since the American people seem to be too dense to put two and two together, a new shooting has occurred on the Arizona State campus where the shooter said he was a pro-gun Second Amendment person. And, you know, just to make it really obvious that this is what's going to happen if we don't rein people in. So the more interesting development is Ben Carson has just published a book in which he explains that he believes that the Jews in Germany would have been better positioned to oppose Hitler and defend themselves if only they had been armed. Remarkably enough, the Anti-Defamation League, which should know better, has told Ben Carson that he's mistaken about it. And Ben Carson, for which I'm eternally grateful, has responded, no, he understands the facts, he studied the matter, and he'd be glad to debate anyone who wants to take him on. I think Ben Carson is 100% in the right. Donald Trump is also an enthusiast for the Second Amendment. I do not know at present Bernie Sanders' position, but I do know that Hillary and Barack Obama are adamantly opposed. And the question becomes, are there any good grounds to support them? Let us take a look at the first slide, which formulates the Second Amendment itself, to wit. The Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, the Second Amendment, and indeed our Bill of Rights, has precursors in England, where, as the second slide shows, one of the leading commentators on the British law, Sir William Blackstone, wrote in the 18th century about the right to have arms being auxiliary to the natural right of resistance and self-preservation, but conceded that the right was subject to their suitability and allowance by law. Here is a quote from Blackstone. The fifth and last auxiliary right of the subject that I shall at present mention is that having arms for their defense, suitable to their condition and degree, and such as are allowed by law, which is also declared by the same statute and is indeed a public allowance under due restrictions of the natural right of resistance and self-preservation when the sanctions of society and laws are found insufficient to restrain the violence of oppression. Well, that's a fine statement, but it seems to me there are a variety of other reasons why having relatively unrestricted access to weapons in recognition of the Second Amendment is a worthy objective. As the next slide shows, here I inventory a series of reasons that seem to me on their face to create the presumption that the Second Amendment is a good thing and ought not to be unduly constrained. First, citizen soldiers. When the founding fathers authored the Second Amendment, they recognized the role of citizens as soldiers in defeating the British. This was an extremely important form of being capable of resisting the tyranny of the British Crown. And may I add, Ben Carson added that it is a significant move by tyrants to disarm the public as they advance the imposition of tyranny. Admirably said. I'm very enthusiastic about him on this ground. Home defense. Suppose someone is seeking to break into your house. What do you do? Typically, you call the police. And why do you call the police? Because the police are armed. But if you were already armed, you wouldn't have to undergo the delay, which typically occurs in the police reaching your door to cope with a situation because you could cope with it yourself. In fact, in the meanwhile, the intruder may have succeeded in entering your home, clobbering you, raping your wife, who knows what. So there's another excellent reason, home defense, which Blackstone recognized, to maintain order. Suppose the federal government were to collapse for one among various reasons, including the possibility of a nuclear attack. Suppose there were no government there to offer its protection. Then we all be on our own. And in a circumstance like that, what better way to be able to do your part to maintain order than if you happen to be armed? Indeed, the next point, marauding gangs would be an obvious menace because you could have, for example, motorcycle gangs who were armed with knives, guns, chains, what have you, wanting to loot and pillage and rape and maim your community, your home. Once again, what could you do about it in your neighborhood if you were unarmed? Another, of course, is the resistance of invading armies, which is a variation on citizen soldiers. The highest military advisor to Admiral Hirohito advised against invading the United States because, he said, there would be a sniper behind every bush. And indeed, he was correct. So that we have well over 100 million armed American citizens, that's surely our greatest defense against any possible invasion by a foreign power. Personal defense, I also list here, because there are many circumstances in which you might find yourself in an awkward situation to fend off a mugging or some kind of gang attack. One of the three military who defeated the purported terrorist on the French train was recently assaulted in a fight outside of a bar. That's most unfortunate. Some would say, well, perhaps it's just as well. He didn't have a weapon, but he was repeatedly stabbed and could well have been killed. If you have a weapon, then you're in a better position to defend yourself. The idea of gun-free zones really strikes me as preposterous for the reason that when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Now, that was a motto of the NRA, but think about it. When they deprive law-abiding citizens of guns, who's going to have weapons? It will be those who are not law-abiding, who are going to be the problem in any case anyway. And when Governor Cuomo of New York made an effort to confiscate weapons, magazines, and so forth of New York residents, a survey was conducted of whether any of the residents of their communities would be willing to have a sign posted in their yard, gun-free zone. None of them picked up on it. And it has been preposterous to me how the principal of the school in Oregon, in an interview after the alleged shooting, which we have disclosed on this very program to be fraudulent, said no, she had no plans to change their security arrangements, that they were very comfortable and in fact that this had been an anomaly. But just imagine if some of the students or the teachers had been armed, then the fanciful scenario we've been given could never have come to pass. I shall not belabor that it was another fake shooting intended to bolster the case for gun control, but that's which is exactly what it appears to be, but rather to emphasize that if they'd had armed personnel on the campus, the chances it could have taken place successfully would be dramatically reduced. Now, the argument we get from Barack Obama, from Hillary Clinton, from those sometimes referred to as bleeding heart liberals, where I'm a liberal but not of the bleeding heart variety, is that if you take away guns, you will reduce crime. Since that's the most important contention they make, I decided to do some research on the topic. And I discovered an excellent website here in slide four, the name of which, and you can track it down yourself, is Crime Prevention Research Center. What they have done is to undertake objective studies, this one published on 1 December 2013, of murder and homicide rates before and after gun bans. It begins with the observation, every place that has banned guns has seen murder rates go up. You cannot point to one place where murder rates have fallen, whether it's Chicago or the District of Columbia or even island nations like England, Jamaica, or Ireland. For an example of homicide rates before and after a ban, take the case of the handgun ban in England and Wales in January 1997. After the ban, clearly homicide rates bounced around over time, but there is only 1 year, 2010, when the homicide rate is lower than it was in 1996. The immediate effect was about a 50% increase in the homicide rates. The homicide rate only began falling when there was a large increase in the number of police officers during 2003 and 2004, which really, of course, represents force or guns on the other side. Despite the huge increase in the number of police, the murder rate still remains slightly higher than the immediate pre-ban rate. So let's look at a couple of their studies. In the next slide, number five, we see the incidents in relation to Britain after it banned handguns. Notice the rate before the vertical line. Handgun ban initiated January 1997. And look how it skyrocketed and went up. And it was only after this dramatic increase in 2003, 2004 that the British began putting more police on the street, a very expensive proposition. If they had not banned handguns, there's, in my judgment, no doubt that this dramatic increase would not have taken place. Here's another study they have done. Here we have the homicide rate supplemental. Well, this is what this is actually showing, is the same homicide rate at the top and then how it only fell after they dramatically increased the number of police, constables, sergeants, inspectors, chief inspectors, and superintendents at the bottom. Here's another study. This is Ireland's murder rate. While murder rates in the United States and Jamaica include both murders and manslaughter, Ireland's numbers include only murder. Including manslaughter would probably roughly double the measured murder rate for Ireland for most years. Look again then at the dotted line. Look at the dramatic increase after guns have been banned. Can there be any doubt that this is because when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns? Here's yet another study, this time in Jamaica. Look at the Jamaica murder rate, relatively constant until 1974 when guns were banned, and it's been escalating sometimes dramatically ever since. Remember, again, when guns are banned or outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Here's yet another study, this time for Chicago and the District of Columbia. Notice Chicago, which has some very tough gun laws now, and notice how the rate, the homicide rate, has increased. So if Hillary and Barack Obama were correct that banning guns leads to a reduction in murders, They're simply flat out wrong. And it's also true in the District of Columbia shown below. The murder rate has gone up after handguns have been banned. Well, there's another line of argument that Barack Obama has given, as we see here, comparing death rates for mass public shootings and mass public violence in the U.S. and Europe. He insists that other countries don't suffer what we suffer. Number one, in his address to the nation after the Charleston attack, this was Dylann Roof. We had photoshopped images of him with apartheid patches on his jacket. We had footage of him entering the church in the evening, mistaking the date, the time of 0800 for 8 p.m. on a 24-hour clock, when it should have been 2000 instead. In his first address to the nation after the Charleston attack, Obama claimed, "We as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. It doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency." Harry Reid made a similar statement on June 23rd. "The United States is the only advanced country where this type of mass violence occurs. Let's do something. We can expand, for example, background checks. We should support not giving guns to people who are mentally ill and felons." Well, what does Crime Prevention Research Center have to say about their claims? Next slide, we find this claim is simply not true. Mass public shootings, defined as four or more people killed, and not in the course of committing another crime, and not involving struggles over sovereignty. The focus on excluding shootings that do not involve other crimes, for example, gang fights or robberies, has been used from the original research by Lott and Landis to more recently the FBI, from 2009 to the Charleston massacre, which matches the starting period for another recent study we did on U.S. shootings. And we chose that because that was a starting point that Bloomberg's group had picked. The cases were compiled doing a news search. The starting year was picked simply because last year we had a report that looked at mass public shootings in the U.S. starting in 2009. And what did they find? The next chart shows, comparing annual death rates for mass public shootings, European countries versus the U.S. This is the rate death rate per million people. Norway, 2.044. Macedonia, 0.377. Serbia, 2.83. Finland, 0.142. Belgium, 0.138. Czech Republic, 0.133. United States, 0.095. So not only are we not the leading country with regard to the annual death rate from mass public shootings, but there are 6 other nations of the world that are advanced countries that have higher rates. They did another study because the argument has also been made it's a question of the frequency or the sheer numbers of people who are killed. And this is the next. Some people have defended President Obama's statement by pointing to the word frequency. But even if one puts it in terms of frequency, the president's statement is still false, with the U.S. ranking 9th compared to European countries. Frequency of mass public shootings. Highest Macedonia, then Serbia, then Switzerland, then Norway, then Slovakia, then Finland, then Belgium, then the Czech Republic. Finally, we get to the United States. So I'm tempted to say, liar, liar, pants on fire. This information is publicly available. It reflects objective studies using statistics. Here's the next slide, number 14. Last Friday, Obama said, if Congress had passed some common sense gun reforms after Newtown, after a group of children had been gunned down in their own classrooms, reforms that 90% of the American people support, we wouldn't have prevented every act of violence or even most. We don't know if it would have prevented what would have happened in Charleston, but we might still have some more Americans with us. However, there is no evidence that 90% of Americans support the reforms that Obama was pushing. It is true that 80 to 90% of Americans say they support background checks on all gun buyers. But that is not the same thing as saying that they supported universal background checks And it's not the same thing as them saying they supported the law that Obama wanted. When asked this question, people may be thinking of guns being purchased at a store and possibly a gun show. But it isn't at all clear they're talking about transfer between friends, a gift or a sale. And it's very doubtful they are referring to transfers between family members. Surveys that specifically addressed the background check bill before the Senate in 2013 did not show overwhelming support. The most support that I can find for such a bill was in Washington State, where Initiative 594 was passed with 59% support, not 90%, and it had spending that outdid the initiative's opponents by about 33-1. Isn't that America? Isn't that politics? Mayor Bloomberg is a very wealthy man who's invested a lot of money in gun control. None of the laws that Obama has put forward would have had any impact on either Newtown or Charleston. The Charleston killer apparently did pass a background check, and in any case, he obtained his gun by stealing it from his mom. On Monday, June 22nd, President Obama made similar comments and also added, "And one of those actions we could take would be to enhance some basic common sense gun safety laws that, by the way, the majority of gun owners support." This claim has the same problem that Obama's other statements have. Here's another claim by Obama from last Friday. "You don't see murder on this kind of scale with this kind of frequency in any other advanced nation on earth." Well, let's look again at another study. The homicide rate for developed countries in 2011, since the highest rate by far is Brazil, then Mexico, then Russia, then Chile, then the United States. So Obama, once again, is making his case by lying to the American people. In fact, it appears that the more guns, the less crime. If you want to talk about common sense principles here, what could be more common sense than the points that the NRA has been making for so very long, that when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns? Outlaws are not going to obey the law. Passing more laws about gun control, therefore, are not going to affect them, their conduct, or their possession of weapons. It simply renders the rest of the nation, the law-abiding citizens, defenseless. Think about it. Would you want to have a sign on your front yard that says gun-free zone? So any burglar or vicious thug would know that he wouldn't have to worry about being met with guns. A brilliant challenge was made by Matt Drudge to Barack Obama, saying, "Okay, Barack, give up your Secret Service details. Set an example by getting rid of this massive armament of personnel who are protecting you everywhere you go in the world." Does anyone seriously think there's a chance that Barack Obama is going to surrender his Secret Service detail? Most certainly not. And while the Anti-Defamation League may challenge Ben Carson's observations that the Jews in Germany would have been better positioned to defend themselves from abuse by the Nazis had they retained ownership of their guns, all the evidence is on the side of Ben Carson. I was so impressed when he simply calmly replied in response to these attacks that he has studied the subject, he knows what he's speaking about, and he'd be willing to debate anyone who wants to debate him about it. And I say, bring it on. Once you understand that Obama and Clinton have been making a false appeal to a premise that cannot be sustained, namely that fewer guns mean less murders, fewer guns mean less mass assaults and the like, that they are simply either massively ignorant, in which case they ought not to be addressing this issue at all, or simply deliberately dissembling, lying to the American people. We have known prominent politicians in the United States to lie to the people. Some of the greatest examples are Dick Cheney and George Bush lying to us about 9/11, which was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. But now we have a new generation of politicians, including Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, lying again to the American people about a matter that would make them manifestly less safe, less capable of upholding the national security, less capable of fending off gangs of thugs, less capable of resisting an armed invasion by another nation, less able to defend themselves at home from their own person and property. I say, I admire Ben Carson for making this an issue. It is going to come up in every debate in the future for President of the United States, as well it should. And let us only hope that the American people won't allow themselves to be played for suckers again. Bush and Cheney played us for suckers over 9/11. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are trying to play us for suckers over gun control. Don't fall for it. Your future, your life, the well-being of your nation may depend on it. Don't let them play us for saps. This is Jim Fetzer, your host, inviting you to stand by for the interview. My interview with John Friend will be right back.
Hi, I'm Josh Steffler from Freedom Free for All Television. And with the media going completely corporately controlled in this day and age, we couldn't put shows on like this without the help of our independent media partners, MBC, Media Broadcasting Center. So if you like this show, check them out on WeBookYourShow.com, and you can find all sorts of different channels promoting liberty, freedom, and an independent press and an independent media. Thank you for watching.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
We'll be right back.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
All right, welcome folks, and good evening. Today is Tuesday, October 6th, 2015. This is John Friend, and you are listening to a very special edition of The Realist Report right here on Renegade Broadcasting. Of course, tonight is the wild card slot, and I'd like to thank Kyle for giving me an opportunity to once again host my program here on Renegade. I do encourage listeners to check out all of the great programs here on the network. You can find the archives and information about upcoming shows over at renegadebroadcasting.com. And, of course, my website is therealistreport.com, and you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/realistreport. I am also on Facebook at facebook.com/realistreport. I also write for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, as well as the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly historical review magazine affiliated with American Free Press. Both publications are worth subscribing to, and I encourage listeners to do so if they are not already. Visit AmericanFreePress.net for all of our latest articles and to find subscription information. Also check out BarnesReview.org for details about the magazine and the wide variety of important books that we have for sale. And with that said, I'd like to introduce my special guest this evening. His name is Dr. Jim Fetzer, and he is the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. He is also one of the leading geopolitical commentators in the alternative media today. And tonight we will be discussing a number of current events, as well as the latest geopolitical happenings in the Middle East and around the world. So, Dr. Fetzer, welcome to the program. It's always an honor and a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, John, I'm delighted. I'm real glad to have this chance for us to talk again.
Yes, yes, there's a lot going on, a lot to cover. I guess, first off, just to get started, how have you been? It's been a while since, you know, we've done a show together. It's been a while since we've, you know, last spoken. So, just to get started, how's everything going?
Terrific, right? John. My show, my radio show, The Real Deal, for which I had 882-hour programs on the complex and controversial issues of our time, Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, has gone video. This happened in January, and now I have about 110 video shows since January. And it's really fascinating stuff. Just to mention a couple, if anyone wanted a sampler, I've done two on 9/11 recently that were rather sensational. One is if you go to the Real Deal episode, just abbreviation EP number 100, the 9/11 crash sites with Major General Albert Stubblebine, who during his career, he's now retired, was in charge of all U.S. military intelligence. We went through all four of the crash sites, and he agreed that each of the four crash sites had been fabricated or faked, albeit in different ways. And then as a sequel, if you go to the Real Deal episode or EP number 103, 9/11, who was responsible and why with Dennis Camino, where Dennis is the former top electronics troubleshooter for the Navy. Before he went to work for Raytheon, he's a very smart guy. And we went through the mountain of evidence that indicates that 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. In fact, all the three airports where the flights ostensibly originated were all under control of ICTS, which was an Israeli security firm. And, you know, the role of Israel in this is simply overwhelming. So if someone wants an overview, an integrated overview about 9/11, I think it would be hard to top that real deal episode number 103 with Dennis Camino.
Very good. Now, where can people access your radio programs? Which are so? Are they and just to clarify, they are available for MP3 download as well as in video format. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's actually right. Yes, if you go to radiofetzer.blogspot.com, radiofetzer.blogspot.com, you'll get the MP3s for the original 880, also for the over 100. So there are nearly 1,000 shows there now, John.
Very good. Yeah. I frequent that website. And, you know, I've definitely been staying up to speed with some of the shows that you've been doing, some of the articles you've been writing. I know you also have – you used to contribute to Veterans Today, and you no longer do, from what I understand.
Well, and I had a falling out with Gordon Duff, who's the senior editor. It was very strange, John. I thought Jade Helm was enormously important and a threat to freedom and democracy here in the United States. I believe now it was a pilot project to see how far they could go, and that it still remains a threat for future activation. They closed five Walmarts, and they were converting them. They were putting up 8- and 9-foot-high fences. They were remodeling the interior. They were bringing in prison-like facilities. They were bringing a lot of military equipment, which were being moved all over the country. This was extremely disturbing. So I was, when Gordon faulted one of the authors for Robert O'Dowd for Veterans Today, who's, like myself, a former Marine, for writing on Jade Helm. I took exception to that, wrote an article about Jade Helm, pointing out it was no ordinary training drill. And Gordon took exception to that as well. And when I was on the air that night with Stu Webb talking about it, I discovered the next morning he had taken me off of Veterans Today. When he left my name up there for a month, I thought that was odd, and he shouldn't have done that if he had taken me out. So I said, Gordon, why don't you remove my name? He did, and deleted at the same time the 150 articles I'd published for Veterans Today, John, which was quite an outrage. What happened, this is all very ironic, because what happened was Veterans Today took a tremendous hit to the readership. From my estimate, they might have lost about half of their readers. And some were concerned, some because they thought it was unethical. Kevin Barrett argued with the editorial board they ought to restore my articles. And the editorial board, I think largely to try to regain readers, did restore them. But then, oddly enough, when I tried to access them because I wanted to move them elsewhere, for example, onto my blog at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, I discovered that Gordon had deployed little software robots to make it impossible to access them. So I raised quite an issue over that. And in fact, now the general manager's restored them and I'm able to gain access. So I moved initially on the 28th, I moved 20 articles about 9/11 onto my blog. And then on the 29th, I moved 30 articles about JFK onto my blog. And then on the 30th, I moved 20 more articles about JFK onto my blog. I mean, I have over 30 articles about Sandy Hook alone on that blog, John.
Right, yeah.
I mean, on Veterans Today. And what's happened in relation to Sandy Hook, by the way, is I'm completing now the final stage of a new book, a collection of essays on Sandy Hook. That will be out by the end of the month, and it might be a great time for us to get together again.
Yeah, sure. I know that's been a a topic that we've explored in great detail, and we've been involved in numerous debates on the subject.
Well, there's been some fascinating new stuff, John. I mean, I discovered this fellow, Alan Powell from Australia, who turns out to be one of the very best students of Sandy Hook, even though he's down under. And I had him featured on several of my shows now. And he did one about, sensational new revelations about Sandy Hook, where he went through 50 photographs showing that the Lanza home, where Adam Lanza is supposed to have resided, had to be furnished in order to serve as a prop. And we have a series of photographs showing how they were furnishing the house, going through stages. They were reorganizing. It's really astounding. And he discovered another set of photographs showing how they refurbished the school. They brought in moving vans, furniture, and all that. You see somewhere the moving van tag is over the nameplate for the classroom. I mean, it's just stunning stuff. So, you know, that's all going to be in the book, too.
Okay, and since I knew Sandy Hook would come up at some point. I didn't realize it would come up this early and this quickly. Let's just stick with this just for a second. I don't want to, you know, we've talked about this at length on previous shows, and there's so much that we got to get to tonight.
Sure.
But what is the, what is the overall consensus that's been reached? I mean, because you're dealing with multiple scholars, multiple, you know, very serious.
Well, John, it's a mistake to look for a consensus. They do that in 9/11, and then you're reduced to the lowest common denominator. I get the best people, and we take a leadership role here to explain what happened and let the rest of the world catch up. I'm very bothered.
What, in your view, I mean, based on all the research you've done, you've consulted with multiple experts, what is the primary, thesis of the book, for example?
Well, John, we even have the FEMA manual for the event. There was a drill on the 13th of December 2012, and you had these porta-potties there. You had people with name tags on lanyards. You had the firehouse with boxes of bottled water, pizza cartons. You had parents bringing kids down there. You had a big sign that says everyone must check in. Well, this is all very bizarre if this were actually the scene of a child shooting massacre. And, in fact, it wasn't. It was the scene of the rehearsal where they went live the following day. No one died at Sandy Hook. There was no surge of EMTs into the building, no rush of ambulances. In fact, the street from the school to the firehouse was so clogged you couldn't have got an ambulance in there if you wanted to. The whole thing's a complete fraud. No children, no teachers, no one died. It doesn't even appear as though there was an actual Adam Lanza or his mother Nancy. I've been going through, you know, the photographs from the house, and there's one stunning photograph of her bedroom. And there's just a minimal, you know, kind of reddish stuff. It could be raspberry jelly for all that. I had some pepper poppers, and we got a wonderful raspberry sauce that I dip them in, and they're delicious. It could have been some of that raspberry sauce you might use on a pepper popper. Mm-hmm. But nobody died there. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. You see the rooms in completely different states of repair. These are supposed to be forensic photographs recording the situation. What you're actually seeing is the room being furnished, and they're rearranging things, and you get all these different photographs with stuff in different positions. One, his bedroom is a complete mess. Another, his bedroom is neat and tidy. I mean, it's that blatant. This stuff is absolutely explosive, John, at least no doubt whatsoever. But I'm telling you, I'm putting the FEMA manual right in the book.
Very good. Yeah, well, that will certainly be interesting. And, since shortly after this alleged shooting took place out in Sandy Hook, it was in, December 14th, 2012?
Yeah.
I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from the very beginning, I was just very, very skeptical of everything, especially considering, the political reaction to the event, as well as the media's coverage of what allegedly took place. and, you know, some of these alleged victim family members, for example. And just there's so many bizarre just
when Robbie Parker
official story.
Robbie Parker comes out of the school building, he's jocular, he's laughing, joking around, then he turns and sees the press, so he stops, hyperventilates to get in character, and then starts talking about the loss of his daughter Emily. But he doesn't forget to mention her donation site. In fact, it's one of the ironies that many of those involved were so didn't understand the difference between the rehearsal on the 13th and going live on the 14th. So they already had donation sites set up on the 13th, the day before the event is supposed to have taken place. And even Adam Lanza's date of death, believe it or not, was recorded in the Social Security death index as having occurred on the 13th. It was this bad, John. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. Yeah. And you have Barack Obama acting very solemnly about this. In fact, one of the keys to understanding the assassination was a press conference that Governor Dan Malloy gave, in which he explained that he and the lieutenant governor had been spoken to that something like this might happen, which got me to pondering, something like this, what could he possibly mean? There are only two alternatives. One, that someone was going to come to a public school in Connecticut and shoot it up and kill a lot of kids, in which case the governor surely had a legal and moral obligation to warn the school systems to enhance their security if there was, in fact, such a threat, which he did not do. Or two, he was told they were going to take an abandoned school, they were going to, you know, fake a school shooting to promote a gun control agenda, which is exactly what happened. In fact, the school, John, appears to have been closed by 2008. It wasn't current with Americans for Disability Act requirements, covered with moss, all kinds of stains. I mean, it's in terrible, deplorable condition. There's a piece of pipe sticking out one entrance, which is wooden, that no wheelchair could access, and a piece of pipe sticking out that a little kid could put out an eye if they ran into. I mean, it's ridiculous. No principal would have tolerated the despicable condition of that school. And I was there in Sandy Hook with Wolfgang, and that's a rather upscale community. We visited a soccer field, for example. Every blade of grass was meticulously manicured at that soccer school. So that, you know, it turned out when they were debating over whether to try to refurbish the school or build a new one, the argument was made, which had to have been long known, that it was loaded with asbestos and other toxic elements, biohazards, which led me, when Wolfgang and I went to address the Newtown School Board, ask, when were the parents notified that their children were going to school in a toxic waste dump?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it is just, and you know, the funny thing is it's really not even too difficult. I mean, if you just even do a minor, you know, investigation into what the government and media have told us about Sandy Hook, you know, it very quickly unravels, and it's very easy to demonstrate that the official story, the official I don't want to say conspiracy theory, but the official explanation of what took place that day, you know, Adam Lanza murdering all these children and some of these teachers and whatnot. I mean, it's just there's no evidence to show that any of this really happened. It's just a lot of emotional testimony, and you know, sort of, it's a traumatizing story, and the way the media reports on it really plays on our emotions. We see this, and real quick, we see this in many other events. It's not just Sandy Hook. There are, I mean, more modern events, but also throughout history, this is sort of a theme that I've recognized. You know, whether we're talking about the fake Holocaust story of World War II, which we'll get into here shortly, or you know, some of these other alleged shootings. I want to talk about this alleged shooting out in Oregon in just a second. But this is really sort of a theme that I've noticed, is that the media really is you know, sort of instrumental in facilitating these deceptions. And they really are able to very effectively target and exploit us on a very emotional, sort of base psychological level.
Well, let me just say, John, that each of these appears calculated to have a different kind of emotional impact. I mean, 20 little kids in an elementary school, that's going to affect every parent in the United States. The Boston bombing, well, that was a slight slightly different in its character because that was supposed to justify bringing massive military force into a major American city, lock it down, force individuals out of their homes, all in search for a 19-year-old college student who had nothing to do with it, but to undermine the Fourth Amendment. The Charleston shooting, obviously having a white guy shoot a bunch of black people, you know, makes it look like they're nuts out there out to kill blacks, which, of course, you've had many other fake shootings that are intended to convey. We got a white officer firing 8 rounds at a black man who's running away. He's supposed to hit him 5 times, but he doesn't show any impact from any of the bullets. And obviously, the officer wasn't being threatened or in fear of bodily harm if this man is running away from him and he falls down in a way that's rather gentle, calculated not to cause him any harm. And in the Oregon shooting you're talking about, I mean, this is another...
Jim, I'm sorry. Let me just stop you really quick, and then we'll move on to the Oregon shooting. I just want to make one point. Because that alleged shooting in Charleston at that black church, that historic black church, was so phony. I mean, almost as bad as Sandy Hook. All of these alleged shootings are pretty bad. I mean, it's tough to say which one is worse than the other. They're all just extremely phony. There's really no evidence or proof to show that any of this stuff really has happened. And what was interesting, and I wrote an article about this on my website, shortly after this happened, is, you know, almost immediately after the Charleston shooting, we had organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center and, you know, other organizations openly saying that, quote unquote, white supremacists need to be the new target in the global war on terrorism. I mean, how incredible is that? I mean, this alleged shooting takes place, you know, 5-6 days later. The Southern Poverty Law Center is publishing an op-ed in the New York Times saying that, quote-unquote, white supremacists need to be viewed as the enemy, and they need to be viewed as, you know, as an equal threat, if not more of a threat, than, you know, radical Muslim terrorists.
Well, so John, the Southern Poverty Law Center has a history here of being a purveyor of disinformation. You know, they seem to be in collusion with other government entities. But a point I wanted to add, because you said something in passing that actually made me triggered off in my mind why it may be important. These are all being done by lone shooters, because if it's a lone shooter, you don't have a conspiracy, which only requires two or more individuals acting in concert to bring about an illegal act. So, you know, you've got a lone shooter here, a lone shooter. You actually had two brothers in Boston, so actually that was a conspiracy. Believe it or not, most Americans don't realize that conspiracy is the most commonly prosecuted crime in the United States. Conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to defraud, conspiracy for this, conspiracy for that. So that, you know, conspiracies are dime a dozen. The fact of the matter is we have conspiracies in the, you know, the really major events of our time. JFK, Bobby, Martin Luther King, 9/11, you know, and a host of others, which really have required very careful dissection. Where I do collaborative research is that you mentioned that I founded Scholars, where the idea was bring together experts in different fields, such as pilots, and physicists, and engineers, electrical, mechanical, civil, aeronautic. And that ultimately, all that pooling of expertise, as I did in my study of JFK, I brought together a world authority on the human brain, who was also an expert on wound ballistics, PhD in physics, who was also an MD and board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using x-ray therapy, so he's an expert on the interpretation of x-rays, a legendary photo and film analyst, a physician who had actually been in trauma room 1 when JFK was undergoing examination, and 2 days later was responsible for the care of his alleged assassin. Lee Oswald, another PhD in physics, this time with a specialty in electromagnetism, the properties of light and of images of moving objects. I mean, we really did the job and reconstructed the whole case from the ground up, where I published 3 collections of these expert studies focusing on especially the medical evidence, but also the photographic and film, because we have ample proof that Zapruder film was completely reconstructed, which we might or might not discuss further. But even Vincent Bugliosi, who published this massive tome called Reclaiming History, which was a defense of the Warren Commission, grudgingly acknowledged that my three were the only exclusively scientific books ever published on the assassination of JFK.
Yeah, and the Zapruder film controversy has been something that I've followed for quite a while, and your research and the individuals you collaborated with to put together the Great Zapruder Film Hoax, I think is the title of the book you guys wrote. Yeah, you know, that ultimately did convince me that the Zapruder film was not a genuine capture of JFK's assassination. It was not genuine. It was altered and manufactured in certain ways. And you've gone to great lengths to demonstrate that and get all the details when it comes to that video. But I think that the bigger picture, the more important point in my view, my interest is this idea of media fakery and how the media literally has the ability to present images and testimony that is, presented as genuine, but in fact it's not.
Well, let me give you an illustration for JFK. There was a reporter in the motorcade, and one of the key signs that this was a deliberate setup by the Secret Service is the presidential limousine was set out first. It should have been in the middle. You should have the lower-ranking dignitaries, the mayor, the vice president, before the president. Then they applaud for the mayor, applaud for the vice president. If the president comes first, they applaud for the president. They turn away. They don't even notice the mayor is there. But the fact is, they put all the reporters at the back, and they put the president's personal physician in the very last vehicle. And unlike any other presidential motorcade, these were all with cars of different makes and colors so that the conspirators could know who was where. Normally, they're uniformly black, typically Cadillac limousines, and, most people could never tell one from another, much less who was in them. But the point I'm leading up to is Merriman Smith, who was a very famous reporter at the time, immediately announced three shots had been fired. Now, this is before there had been any investigation. Shots may have still been going on when he made that announcement. It was very clear he was primed to get out of the story of three shots, and he was a very well-known reporter at the time. So, this is clearly an instance where the press was being used to, pollute public understanding of the event. And FBI agents were going to the newspapers, and they were obfuscating very clear remarks that had been made by Malcolm Perry, M.D., who performed a very simple straight in tracheostomy incision on the very clean puncture wound in JFK's throat, which he described three times during the Parkland press conference that occurred about 1:30 after JFK had been officially announced to be dead at 1 o'clock. That it was a wound coming at him. It was wound of entry. So, they had FBI agents calling the different papers to say that the physicians weren't sure if it was caused by one shot or two, these various wounds, to obfuscate the evidence. Because if you got a shot from the front, and any from behind, then of course you got at least two shooters and therefore a conspiracy.
Exactly. Now, we have talked about JFK in the past, but tonight we're going to talk about a lot of other issues. Let's get into this Oregon shooting. I'm looking at your website. It's jamesfetzer.blogspot.com.
Right.
And on October 2nd, just a few days ago, you put up an article here by Bernie Suarez, who I believe is featured regularly on Activist Post.
Yes.
And the article is entitled Oregon Shooting, 13 Troubling Signs of Potentially Yet Another False Flag.
Yeah.
Can you, before we get into this article and sort of your thoughts on the matter, could you just maybe describe what even happened and, sort of what the official story is?
Well, the official story is this lone gunman, I think it was supposed to be 26, came in bearing an arsenal. He's supposed to have carried four different weapons with him at the time. You get the image of a guy, in a Western with the six shooters blazing with both hands. I mean, this is ridiculous from the beginning. He had 13 weapons all together, according to the reports. And he went into the school and he would ask students, what was their religion. And if they were Christian, if they said Christian, he shot him in the head. This is the official report. So, you know, and later he winds up taking himself out or being killed. In any case, he winds up being killed, being dead. That's typical of these events. So they, you don't have a suspect around to answer any questions about it. But the fact of the matter is it got, the kinds of points that Mary Suarez brings out. I mean, you have blazing headlines, you know, announcing the conclusion before any investigation has been done. In this case, it's very clear who was being targeted. I mean, if it was blacks in Charleston, if it was, you know, families in Sandy Hook, it was here Christians. You know, we got a lot of Christians in this country. So here you got a madman right. with guns shooting Christians in the head. Obama, I'm telling you, is behind this whole shebang. In fact, when Governor Malloy said that he had been spoken to, and I gave you the two scenarios, I asked myself, by whom was he spoken to? And it turned out that Eric Holder had visited him in Connecticut on like the 27th, in other words, just a couple of weeks before Sandy Hook, and was the person who spoke to him about what was going to happen. And we know Eric Holder's a zealot for gun control. We even have footage going back as long as 1995 where he's addressing a Democratic women's conference in Washington, D.C., and using the word brainwashing. It says, we got to brainwash the American people to change their attitude. Well, that's what Obama's been doing. All these stunts are intended to brainwash the American people. Now, Sophia Smallstorm had a most interesting point to make the other night when she and I were on a show together. She believes that the government is actually paying communities for these events to take place in their community. We knew Newtown benefited immensely. I mean, not only was there a min of $27 million given in donations, you know, to the survivors. That's over $1 million apiece to the survivors of 20 because there were supposed to be six, you know, teachers and the principal killed as well. But they got $50 million to build a new school. And would you believe that when they tore down the old school, because as I mentioned, it was contaminated with biohazards and all that, they made everyone involved in the deconstruction of the building swear, sign a lifetime gag order that they would never talk about anything they saw, or I dare say, did not see when they tore down the building. Because, you know, one of the oddities of the official narrative of Sandy Hook, John, is that the bodies were left in the school until they were removed in the dead of night. I mean, it's ridiculous. The parents weren't even allowed to see them. They were shown photographs. That was allegedly to spare their feelings. Well, I have children. There's no way in God's earth that I could be kept from seeing the body of my child if he or she had allegedly died. This was all ridiculous. And it wasn't only Robbie Parker who showed no emotion and managed to work in about the donation for his daughter Emily, but this woman, Grace McDonald, whose daughter allegedly died, was on Anderson Cooper. And she was so coquettish, she was all made up, and she was flirting with Anderson Cooper, apparently not knowing his preferences. But, I mean, it's really fascinating, John, you know. And then, of course, you had a whole group of them at the Super Bowl singing. I mean, look, the absurdities here go on and on and on. On and on.
You know, and one thing that I've noticed is, you know, as with any of these, you know, quote-unquote mass shootings or public shootings or whatever, immediately, you know, Obama and some of these other Democrats, and even some Republicans, I think, you know, they're out there saying we need gun control, et cetera. And it's almost, you know, that the American people are not going to give up their gun. I mean, you know, most people that have guns are not just gonna be like, oh, okay, yeah, we need to give up our guns.
John?
They're almost being, you know, reinforce that we need the guns to protect ourselves.
This anti-gun thing is one of the dumbest I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Have people it's promoting it ever it's considered the situation we'd be in if our government were to collapse, say there was a nuclear attack, there was no government? How are we going to fend off the roving gangs of looters and rapists and killers if we are defenseless? Do you know the highest-ranking military aide to Emperor Hirohito advised against invading the United States by Japan because there'd be a sniper behind every bush? I mean, what do we do if we feel threatened? You know, maybe there's a burglar at our door. We call the police. Why? Because the police have guns. Well, if we have a gun, we can defend ourselves without having to call the police and wait for that delay, which may lead to mayhem or our death in the meanwhile. I mean, this anti-gun thing is the dumbest thing I've ever run across in my whole life. Honest to God, it's ridiculous.
Well, it is, and I mean, I think it's pretty clear. Maybe they thought at first that, you know, it would work, like, you know, there would be some sort of gun laws passed, but it's, you know, obviously not working.
Here's so, a beautiful
you know,
thing.
I'm trying to figure out their strategy. I think one of the main thing is with all of these alleged shootings happening, I mean, they're happening like every single week practically, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's just creating so much confusion and fear.
That's the idea. That's the whole idea,
yeah,
John.
That's, I think, what it is, yeah.
Well, it's just it is chaos. What it is. It is exactly what it is.
Nobody knows what's going on, you know, and they're distracted by this and, you know, their potential, you know, situation in the Middle East where, we have mainstream political leaders calling for war with Russia practically. You know, it's just a number of different things. But really what it boils down to is just creating chaos, fear. And,
it's trying to manipulate the public on the basis of fear by fabricated events where nobody's dying. One of the, you know, two of the interesting aspects of this thing in this Oregon thing is that the principal was asked whether she planned to change security at the school. And she said, oh, no, we have a wonderful environment. You know, we're going to keep things just the way they are. This was just an anomaly. How dumb can you get? There's a big sign there that says this is a gun-free zone. Well, can you imagine a better invitation for a lawless criminal who's armed than a gun-free zone? They had a survey. You know, this was about a year and a half ago when the anti-gun thing was gaining movement. And they went to ask families if they'd be willing to put a sign in their yard that says gun-free. And believe it or not, John, no one was willing to do that.
Right. Yeah, that's just, hey, come rob me. I have no
that's
way
right.
to
it's
protect
stupid.
Myself.
This brilliant guy in Australia tells me that they've had their guns controlled massively and that the crime rate has gone up like by five times. I mean, just think of it. You know, if a criminal knows it was an old slogan of the NRA that was completely appropriate. When guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns.
It's true. You know, I wanted to go through and just briefly read the 13 points
Bernie
Suarez put together.
Yeah.
So the first one, and you know, I'm not gonna read the whole thing. I'll just briefly read the points. The first one is the this very sensational mainstream media headline stories demanding your attention. You know, pay attention to this. This is a big deal. Focus on this. You know, immediate call for gun control in the store, in the mainstream media coverage, you know, in the sub headlines of the actual reporting. The third one is that Obama himself immediately calls for gun control.
Yeah.
Seizing the moment, you know, just like Sandy Hook. And he even said, this is a quote here, this is something we should politicize. Obama, our president is openly saying that. What kind of, you know, that, what did just a, an outrageous thing for the president to be saying.
And John Hillary's picked up on it. She's announced now that if the Congress won't act when she becomes president, she's going to sign executive orders to impose gun control. She said it.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah, but you see, Obama's been doing that. He began doing that after Sandy Hook. And would you believe he has 19 executive orders that are still secret, that nobody knows what is in those executive orders? How can you run a democracy when you got a president signing executive orders that are kept secret from the public?
Right. Yeah. Well, the fourth point Bernie Suarez makes here is that the shooter is dead, as usual. I mean, of course, that's always the situation, except for the case down in South Carolina. They actually, you know, allegedly caught that alleged shooter.
Roof. Yeah.
But yeah, but
and that was also phony. It was also, do you know Hillary just happened to be in town that day, so she was able to send her photographer over to the church to take photographs? And I thought, well, that's pretty weird because he supposedly reloaded four or five times. I mean, those pews would have been all shot up. There would have been blood all over the place. It's like in Sandy Hook. There should have been blood on the floor. And one of the reasons they had those lifetime gag orders is they would have seen there was no blood on the floor of any of the classrooms. Well, there would have been no blood in the Charleston. Actually, they went ahead and had services, regular church services, within 2 days. If that shooting had been legitimate, that would have been impossible because the church inside would have been a mess.
Yeah, and I mean, they literally use these alleged events and, you know, the scenery there as it's like a stage. It's like just a theater, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Hillary Clinton showing up and doing a photo op at the church shortly after this.
It's ludicrous.
It really is just, it's insulting to my intelligence that we're supposed to believe this. Now, the fifth point he says is that, the shooter's identity was completely unknown, but there was the repeated mention of quote unquote four guns. You know, this guy had four guns.
Yeah.
So they knew, and that's a ludicrous.
I mean, if you've ever packed a weapon.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, exactly.
John, I have a concealed carry permit. I tell you, carrying four weapons, that's absurd. You're not going to carry four weapons. Yeah. Not even a TAC officer, not even a SWAT team guy is going to carry four weapons. I mean, it's just stupid beyond belief.
Yeah, carrying one is enough work. I mean, if you have two.
Well, if you have a handgun and you have a rifle or whatever, for a SWAT team, that would be a typical.
Yeah, and that's what's so incredible is all of these alleged shootings. It's these guys that are doing it again allegedly. They're armed to the teeth. I mean, they have multiple weapons. They have, as you said, like essentially entire arsenals on their body, on their person, and they're supposed to be running around, shooting 10, 20, 30 people in a matter of minutes. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
It's really unbelievable. I mean, it's not even a plausible scenario.
The kill to target ratio for Sandy Hook was phenomenal. There's no shooter in the world who could perform the feat that Adam Lanza was supposed to have performed. And he had no training with weapons. The ATF officer investigated. They could find no sign that he or his mother had gone to any shooting range or ever practiced marksmanship whatsoever. It was ridiculous.
Exactly, yeah. Well, and see, that's also sort of another aspect of these PSYOPs, these psychological operations, these information warfare campaigns that are being waged against us, is they literally use the media to present events that are so ridiculous that, it is really insulting to your intelligence, and yet we're supposed to just blindly accept them as if it's real. And if you think critically about these things and just, even sit down for 5 minutes and try to, figure out, could this really happen? Is this even, plausible? It's absolutely not. So, I mean, I think that is part of how they do these things. They present these truly, fantastic, just outrageous scenarios, and they just expect us to believe it. It's almost a strategy that they use.
Yes, I agree.
In my view, I mean, 9/11 is a perfect example. I mean, how ridiculous is the official 9/11 conspiracy theory?
Go to jamesfetzer.blogspot.com and check out the 20 articles I have on 9/11 there from the 28th of last month. I mean, there you have a repository right at your fingertips. And it's because he deleted those 150 articles that I republished and grouped together. So you have a mini library, a little archive of articles on 9/11 or then on JFK.
You might have a couple books that need to be published.
Well, they're in the works.
Right.
They're in the works.
Okay. Now, let me get through this. Number six, conflicting reports in the number of dead people. I mean, yeah, that was another big thing is, they were saying it was 8 people, then it was, 20, then it was 12. It was all over the place. So conflicting information, and this is another part, kind of the confusion, going back to what I was just, sort of elaborating on is just the fantastical nature of these official stories. And then there's all this conflicting information. It just overwhelms us. It overwhelms most people. They don't want to take the time or really don't even have the ability to sit down and figure this stuff all out. It just overwhelms our senses and we just accept what the media says.
You want to bump them off it's real fast if you want to get to other subjects.
Oregon is recent state of political interest in neocon former New York City Mayor Bloomberg. Social media controversy already brewing. So initial
images. Get this. The guy had a Facebook page that went up within days of the shooting.
Yes, exactly. That's always the case.
How ridiculous is that?
Yeah, so again, we see how instrumental social media is.
Well, it's all contrived. The whole bloody thing is contrived.
Exactly, yeah. Number nine, initial images and videos show no ambulances, no blood or dead bodies, very similar to Sandy Hook.
That's right.
Number 10, shooting has a divisive religious twist.
Well, that was that's because this one was aimed at Christians.
Right.
It's like, you know, Boston was in part to demonize Muslims because these kids were from Chechnya, but they were, you know, and so you also get a smear in at Russia, too. It was very elaborate, the Boston case, in terms of the way they contrived it, but utterly fake.
Yes.
I just did a show with a former professor of law with whom I've collaborated in the past here. And he pointed out that there wasn't even probable cause to arrest them because the footage we have of them from the marathon shows that neither of them was wearing a black nylon backpack, and yet the backpacks that blew up were both black nylon backpacks, and therefore there wasn't even cause to arrest or indict, much less convict. And that's in the FBI report, and in the indictment itself it states the backpacks that blew up were black nylon, but neither Zocher nor Hammerlin were wearing one.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty incredible what they expect us to believe. Now, number 11, this is an interesting point. No, there's no clear-cut witnesses that actually saw the shooting.
Right. It's all second-hand, third-hand, whatnot. Oh, right. I was told by someone else that they heard the shots fired. Someone else said they saw one of the teachers covered with blood. You know, it's all second-hand. No, there are no first-hand witnesses.
Mm-hmm. And number 12, all students quickly treated as strip searched suspects.
We got photographs of them where they're forced to hold their arms up or put their arms clasped behind their heads and treated as though they were suspects themselves. It's ridiculous. And this is in Oregon.
And it's sort of like what happened with Boston, where, you know, the practically the military rolls into town and takes over. It's a martial law type scenario.
Right.
And here we have, you know, these poor kids that are, you know, sitting in class. They don't know what's happened. Next thing you know, they're being told that there was a shooting and there's a masked gunman. Or, I'm sorry, a gunman running around shooting everyone. And they're all being treated as if they may be suspects in this situation. It's very, you know, psychologically and emotionally traumatizing and exploitative. All of this is the media coverage of it, what actually happened.
Just imagine now if the teachers had been armed. How long would this have lasted? This kid would have been taken out. You know, it's an imaginary, it's a phony scenario. But just imagine, you know, that if they had been armed, I mean, he wouldn't have gone anywhere. I mean, the idea that fewer guns make us more safe, they're not going to make us safe from bad guys with guns. I mean, this is a fundamental blunder on the part of those who are zealous about, you know, taking guns away from people. They just haven't thought it through.
Right. And then number 13 alludes to one of the points that we already discussed, and that's the social media manifesto-like messages.
Well, I said the other day that there's going to be a manifesto that's going to show up, and now there is a manifesto that showed up. This guy, you know, something he wrote.
Yeah, they always have these manifestos.
I know! It's ridiculous! But let me tell you just a little bit more about Oregon before we tie it together. There are photographs of these people, you know, allegedly treating the wounded. And they're all wearing pink shirts, and that's really damn peculiar. I've never seen EMTs wearing pink shirts. They're not showing any urgency. It's all very relaxed. And in addition, get this, we have a woman and her daughter who are presumably showing grief, and the daughter's trying to fake some grief. And then you zoom in on the woman, and she's holding in her hand two bottles of water. That bottled water was all over the place there. You have one photograph after another, a guy walking between two buses, carrying several boxes of bottled water. You got the FBI and the other authorities, and you look at the table, there are boxes of bottled water. This is a sign of a drill. We had that at Sandy Hook, too. Remember I mentioned in the firehouse, when they have a drill, and right in the manual, by the way, it says for the Sandy Hook event, that everyone must register, and I may have mentioned they had a sign that said everyone must check in. It also says right in the manual, refreshments and restrooms will be provided.
How much more obvious could that be? I mean, why would they do
it's that? People aren't even allowed to know two and then see the other two to figure out that it adds up to four. The whole media manages so terribly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that kind of gets to sort of the overarching point of all of this, of even critically examining all of these events, is that, and that is the role of the media, the central role of the media, in not only really executing these events, but really perpetuating them and you know, reinstilling them in our minds and how these events are used to advance certain political and cultural agendas.
Well, John, you know, you had this very interesting story about the Los Rios student trustee Cameron Weaver expressing doubts about the historicity of the Holocaust, the September 11th attacks, and his opinions on other hot button topics that made him a target for being removed as a trustee. I say, well, that compliment, I compliment him because it shows he's got a brain. I think you want trustees right. who have a brain. If he's figured out the story we're told about 11 is fantastic and doesn't add up, he's got a brain. If he's figured out that the Holocaust story is fantastic and doesn't add up, he's got a brain. And literally it doesn't add up, John. Let me just make a couple comments about this. There were reports in the international press of 6 million Jews who were in dire straits or in fear of loss of their lives 236 times before the Nuremberg Tribunal beginning in 1890. So does anyone think that that number came out of the Auschwitz and the Treblinka and the other camps? It didn't. In fact, the International Committee of the Red Cross, who was investigating and keeping meticulous records, updated their data in 1993 to substantiate that. And, of course, this is a minimum because it could have been others who died of which they had no record. 297,081. Now, it's quite a ways removed from 6 million. And, you know, I've published a book that's been very popular, very controversial, but very popular, entitled "And I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either," where I take on, I've got 100 pages, 4 chapters on the moon landing, demonstrating this thing was a fraud, that we did not go, that the United States had to show that it was equal to the technical and scientific superiority, you know, equal to or superior to the Soviet Union, which had launched Sputnik and set us on the path to travel to the moon, except it would turn out to be impossible to do. We didn't have the rocket power. We couldn't overcome the Van Allen belt radiation, a host of other issues. I'm telling you, complete fraud if you want to learn about that. Here's one that will strike some of your readers as it will sound bizarre. But it appears Paul McCartney, actually my favorite musician of all times, died around 9/11, 1966. And to keep the band going, they replaced him with a fellow who looked a lot alike, but they stopped doing touring because it would have been too obvious to their fans. He looked a lot alike, but he was taller. He had a larger head with a longer face. He had a better teeth and a normal palate, whereas Paul had bad teeth and a narrow palate. I mean, the forensic studies demonstrate we're talking about two different people before and after this date. And the fact that they ceased touring is very striking, too, and indicative of what's going on. 4 chapters about that. What's fascinating about it is this. If someone who is as in the public eye as Paul McCartney, probably the most closely watched individual in the world, can die and be replaced and the world largely not be aware of it, then you can replace anyone. And in fact, I have 2 other chapters on the first death of Saddam Hussein, who actually died in a B-1 bomber strike on 7 April 2003, where he was taken out in a restaurant on the outskirts of Baghdad with his 2 sons and 50 or 60 members of his general staff. They were using Jaguar British-made cell phones that we were able to track. I mean, you know, UK being our ally. And we took him out in this bombing strike, and Bush was going to announce it on the mission accomplished event on the USS Lincoln off of San Diego. But somebody realized 3 presidents, Carter, Reagan, and Ford, had signed executive orders precluding the assassination of the leaders of foreign states, so that if he were to announce he had done it, he would have been liable for prosecution. So they dropped it. The whole thing got muddled. I mean, it was a bizarre event. They took one of his doubles, put him in a spider hole, claimed to have found him, put him on trial, and hung him. And Joe Viles, who was an Australian photojournalist, noticed there was a problem because the teeth were wrong, the bite was wrong. Saddam had wonderful teeth. He had a normal overbite. The double had bad teeth and an underbite. I mean, it's fascinating. In fact, well, Saddam's wife went to visit him, arranged by the Red Cross, and came out screaming, "This is not my husband. This is a double. What have you done with my husband?" But, of course, the world didn't catch on, didn't figure it out, and we went ahead with the whole fraud. The attack on the compound in Pakistan, I have 2 chapters on that as well, represented the second death of Osama bin Laden. It was all political theater because he'd actually died on or about 15 December 2001 in Afghanistan. He suffered all these medical maladies.
Right.
It's hard
right.
to get those dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan, John. And he was buried in an unmarked grave. Nick Kohlstrom, whom I mentioned before, published an article about it entitled Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. David Ray Griffin, who's published 10 books about 9/11, all meticulous, documented in detail, published a book about it entitled Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive. Get this, even Fox News in this instance was on top of the story, because on 26 December 2001, they published a story you can still find online reporting Osama bin Laden was already dead. So the whole thing on the compound was just absurd. And then, fourth, yep. and I bring it up for this reason, the last section is on the Holocaust, and I have four marvelous experts on the Holocaust. Thomas Dalton, who actually authored the book, Debating the Holocaust, brilliant book, just come out in a new edition, has a marvelous piece on it. Robert Forasson, one of the leading experts on the Holocaust in the world, has a chapter in there. I have a chapter in there summarizing an overview of what we know now about the Holocaust and the 6 million and the origin of that, apparently in a disputed passage in Leviticus. That's interpreted to mean that the chosen people can only return to the promised land when they're minus 6 million consumed in the flames. But it requires interpolation because there's no word in the original Hebrew for 6 million. And Nick Kohlstrom, who's published a completely brilliant book called Breaking the Spell, where he brings out all the scientific evidence that demonstrates that the stories of Jews being gassed to death using Zyklon B is false. It's not scientifically defensible. For the following two reasons, John, Zyklon B is a mild form of cyanide, but if you die from Zyklon B, your body would turn pink. We don't have any reports of pink bodies. And in addition, if Zyklon B is used in a building, there's normally a chemical reaction between the walls and the Zyklon that turns the walls blue. But not only do we have no pink bodies, but the only blue walls were in chambers that were used for delousing, where Zyklon B was being used to kill body lice because it was responsible for the spread of dysentery and other diseases. In other words, it was a sanitation right. measure. These were labor camps, and you can't get any work out of a corpse. So, I mean, it's all mythological. You know, many step forward to give this testimony, informally, not under oath, to justify the creation of the State of Israel. Would you believe Robert Forasson published an article about the Zundel trials, 1985 and 1988, where Ernst Zundel was a Canadian who denied the Holocaust story and was prosecuted for it. And would you believe in the course of the prosecution in court, they could not produce a single, not one witness who could testify to any Jews having been put to death by gas in a concentration camp. Believe it or not, John, more Catholics than Jews died at Auschwitz.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. And you were referring to a story about this guy up in it's a local community college up in the Sacramento area, and he was a student trustee. His name is Cameron Weaver.
Right.
And I actually wrote an article about this for American Free Press this week, so it should be appearing in this week's edition of the newspaper. And this poor guy, man, he did an interview with the student newspaper. It's called the American River Current, and he attends the American River College. It's like a, you know, community college up there in the Sacramento area. And, you know, all he really did was bring up the fact that, you know, he found it suspicious and just interesting and worthy of discussion and investigation that there were numerous references to, quote-unquote, 6 million Jews, you know, suffering and they're being persecuted and many of them are dying. You know, and this was going on well before World War II even started. And, you know, this is very well known. I mean, you just, you know, elaborated on it. You can find all sorts of videos on YouTube about this. And, you know, during this interview, he also expressed doubts about the official 9/11 story. You know, he said that he's a critical thinker and, you know, he thinks that, you know, being a critical thinker and an independent thinker makes him a good student representative. And this poor guy is basically being demonized and persecuted, and there's a There's an attempt to recall him right now. I tried reaching out and see if I could get in touch with this guy and, you know, interview him, but I wasn't able to reach him. But yeah, it really is an interesting story, and I think it speaks volumes about, you know, political correctness in this country and, you know, certain topics that we're just not allowed to talk about or question.
Yeah.
So, thanks for bringing that up for me, Jim. I appreciate that. Let's move on to, I wanted to talk about the 2016 election.
Yes. Well, I love it. I'm fascinated by it. I've been following it very closely. And I think Trump is absolutely magnificent. He's been shattering all the conventions. He's totally politically incorrect. He's exposing the corruption of our politics. He's talking about how politicians are bought and sold. And he's just shaking up the establishment unbelievably, John. He's a wonderful, because he's self-financed, he's incorruptible, and he's an outspoken guy. So I love Donald Trump. Now, on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders is just burning up the turf. Bernie's an honest, genuine, authentic person, as is Donald Trump. And therefore, people are responding. They're tired of the phony, artificial, shallow politicians, which include virtually all of the rest. Virtually all of the rest. This Carly Fiorina is a very strange case. She's a very nasty person. You get deeper into her background, the more disturbing it becomes. But she used a propaganda piece from anti-abortion zealots to claim that Planned Parenthood would take abort a baby that was, you know, fully intact and then dismember it and harvest its organs and its brain. Planned Parenthood had nothing to do with that. That was a 19-week miscarriage that had occurred. The woman who actually had the miscarriage has acknowledged it. It wasn't an abortion at all. There was no dissection. There was no harvesting of organs. She, however, is pro-life, so she hasn't spoken up to complain about it, but the Daily Cost uncovered it. And would you believe, later this month, I'm going to speak at the Association for Politics and the Life Sciences about the whole abortion debate and Carly Fiorina's role here and the necessity to take religious-based views out of public policy debates. Because as long as you allow people to appeal to the religious beliefs, it's all unsolvable. It's irreconcilable because religious beliefs have no foundation. They're not testable. There's no empirical evidence. There's no scientific research that can confirm or disconfirm, for example, the existence of God himself. And I say that as a professional philosopher of science who spent 35 years offering courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning. So the first measure you have to take is to exclude all religious-based views. Just get them out of there and deal with science and objective information. Then the crucial step is to distinguish between the stages of neurophysiological development, technically known as embryogenesis, to figure out at what stage of development it's right to qualify the developing entity as a person that's entitled to the social, ethical, legal status of having protection afforded by the law. The Supreme Court determined that that should be at the end of the second trimester. The reason, which of course is 6 months, and six times four is 24, so this child that was, you know, born at 19 through a miscarriage only lived a minute or two because it's a functional lung development. The lungs aren't developed sufficiently to sustain life outside of the intrauterine environment until about 6 months. That's also when the pain threshold sets in. So it seems that that's very appropriate to take the end of the second trimester on physiological and pain capacity grounds as the beginning of the entitlement to the most primitive rights humans could have, a right to life, unless its continued existence threatens the life or health of the mother, in which case her rights are granted as superior to that of the developing fetus. But the idea of going after women, you know, who don't want to carry to term an unwanted fetus is outrageous. Slavery is immoral, if anything is immoral, and it's turning them into reproductive slaves. So I'm completely...
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I'd like to get back to the 2016 election here.
Well, this is part of it, because I'm telling you, this abortion thing is a huge issue. In fact, frankly, the Republicans are giving the election to Hillary because she's going to get all the women. There are 52% of the American voting population is women. and they are going to overwhelmingly support Hillary. So this is a stupid political strategy. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's willing to lie about it, use an example that was a fake to begin with because it didn't even involve abortion. It didn't involve Planned Parenthood. It didn't involve harvesting of organs. So I'm telling you, John, you got to get into this because it's a key issue in this campaign.
So you think abortion is the main issue that we need to be talking
about? I'm not saying it's the only. I'm saying it's one of the main issues.
Now our country is being flooded with millions of third world people, many of whom are illegal. You know, our foreign policy is a mess. It's a disaster. I'd like to talk about that in just a minute. Our, you know, economy is tanking. All of our jobs are going overseas.
Yeah.
And we're talking about abortion. I don't want to talk about abortion, frankly.
Well, you may not want to. I'm telling you, it's going to make a big difference in this election because the Republicans are in the process of giving it away to the Democrats.
So you think abortion is going to determine the 2016 presidential
It's going to be a major factor.
Okay. Well, let's move on to other issues then. So you mentioned Donald Trump. Is Donald Trump out there talking about abortion?
Oh, Trump's pretty smart in how he crafts what he has to say. For example, he has in the past been on the birther, joined the birther movement that Obama wasn't actually born in the United States. And frankly, I was on the verge of publishing an article about it when the political theater, the event of the attack on the compound in Afghanistan took place. He'd been under attack for having Guantanamo still open, so they claimed the tip about Osama's location had come from Guantanamo. He'd been criticized for having troops in Pakistan, so gee, aren't we glad they were there after all. And he swept the birth control issue off of the front page and posed himself triumphantly for a re-election by taking out the most wanted man in the world who'd been dead for 10 years. Now, John, you can't do better than that when it comes to political theater. And the fact of the matter is, I've done research. I was on the verge of publishing an article about this. It's very clear that the Hawaiian birth certificate is fake. I had a guy on my radio show for 2 hours talking about it. We went through it. It's not authentic. Now, what's most interesting is there's a birth certificate from Kenya that is also fake. It has any number of blatant indications that it's fake, that you can tell that this is not. So most people think, oh, well, if the Kenya a birth certificate is fake, then, you know, it must mean he was not born in Kenya. But there's a second Kenya birth certificate that appears to be completely authentic. He appears to have been born in Kenya. He was raised in Indonesia. He became an Indonesian citizen. He came to the United States, and he benefited from scholarships that were only available to foreign students, which explains why his first otherwise absurd act as president of the United States was to seal all his educational records. Can you imagine, you know, every student in the United States wants to study the president and his history, but Obama sealed all of his educational records because they showed that he was the beneficiary of scholarships that were only available to foreign students. I tell you, that's the deal here.
Yeah, and that definitely does not surprise me. And I haven't done too much research into that because there's so many other issues that are I hear you, and you're probably right. I'm not trying to.
Well, no. I'm just saying, John. Look, I'm right at the point where I was about to publish on this. Obama pulled the stunt of the raid on the compound in Pakistan. Now, Donald Trump used to talk about it, but he was smart enough to know that it's not a good idea today. So he simply says, "I don't want to talk about it."
Yeah, and he does. He openly says that when he's asked about it.
Well,
and
he's nobody's fool, John.
Absolutely, yeah. And just to give you my take on Donald Trump, I have been just absolutely impressed with the man. I mean, frankly, I think he's in an entirely different league than any other candidate. I have to admit that I haven't really followed anything that Bernie Sanders has been doing or saying. I did see him get bullied off of his own stage by a couple Black Lives Matter.
Well, that was what are you going to do, right? It's a lose-lose proposition,
well,
John.
What you do is you tell these women to get off the stage, and you have your security.
Yeah, then you have an incident that's going to be portrayed as a racist toward blacks. So he's going to have plenty of other opportunities. That was an abuse by them, John. In principle, in principle, you're right.
Donald Trump would never let anything like that ever happen. That would be unbelievable. You know, Donald Trump would never let anything like that happen.
He probably wouldn't. I agree.
No, he would not.
I agree. But Bernie's a good man. And, you know, he suffers from the reputation of being a socialist. But if you understand what we're talking about here, communism involves the government owning everything, all the property, the means of production. Laissez-faire capitalism, the government owns virtually nothing, all the private citizens. So what Bernie's talking about is where you have the government playing a role in regulating capitalism, looking out for the workers' rights and so that and so forth. That's what we have in the United States today. So to call Bernie a socialist is to say he represents a system like what we have here in the United States and the other modern industrial nations in the world. They just get away with the fact that the word socialist has been tainted to be identified with communism by people who are not clear thinkers. So the fact that Bernie declares himself as a socialist should not be held against him if you understand the meaning of the word.
Sure, yeah, that's a good point, and I totally agree with you. But I got to say, I mean, Trump has just been really impressive to me. And I know, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence to show that the elections themselves are in many ways, you know, sort of rigged or, you know, largely controlled by the media anyways. You know, it's kind of just a reality television show. You know what I mean? But I think that Donald Trump, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about this. My take about Donald Trump is that he basically got involved in this election and, you know, for entirely genuine purposes. He said, you know, he talked about the main issues he wanted to talk about, which is immigration, which is making America great again, which is bringing jobs back to America. You know, very populist talking points. You know, he's sort of vague. He didn't really have a lot of details, but, you know, he was very bold and confident and said, look, I'm going to get this done.
And
his support, and he just, you know, rose in the polls. Everybody loved what this guy had to say, what he had to say at the beginning, and he's running with it.
He's just like,
hey, look, I can do this.
John, the guy's a problem solver. He believes
right,
in solving problems. These other politicians talk and never get anything done. He can't afford to do that. He knows fortunes are made and lost by on the basis of timely decisions. He's used to doing that. He'd be a brilliant president. I'm convinced of it.
Oh, I think so. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that are very critical of Trump for a variety of reasons. But I mean, just based on what he said and his actions, he appears very genuine. You know, his foreign policy stances are much more sane. I mean, they actually make sense. They're logical, as opposed to virtually every other candidate, especially on the GOP side. And we can get into some of the foreign policy stuff here in just a second, because what Russia's doing in Syria is really causing some problems. And some of these people, if they had their way, we'd be at war with Russia right now for what they've done. And Trump is out there saying, look, Putin is actually doing work for us. You know, he's actually finishing the job that we should have started from the very beginning.
Yeah, but John, our whole foreign policy is hypocritical. The DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, created ISIS. We have the document from 2012. It's being funded by the United States, by Israel. We had two UK cargo planes supplying ISIS, which were shot down by the Iraqi army, of all things. A week later, they shot down an American helicopter. ISIS being advised by two retired U.S. generals. We have photographs of ISIS troops with U.S. Army tattoos. We have a video showing how they're making a beheading video on a soundstage, either in Hollywood or in Tel Aviv. The whole thing is a fraud. We knew the location of 60 ISIS camps. We didn't attack any of them. Why? Because we're using it as a pseudo-justification to run bombing raids that are taking out the infrastructure of Syria. This is all a guise, a deception to take advantage of the situation and instill fear in the American people and claim we're doing something good when we're actually doing something that's profoundly evil. We don't have any right to take out the sovereign leader of a sovereign state. Putin asked recently, what gave NATO the right to take out Gaddafi? Gaddafi was using oil revenue of Israel, of Libya to share it with the Libyan people. He gave $25,000 gifts to newly married couples. They had a wonderful health care, public education. He was building the Great Waterworks Project, which would turn North Africa into a veritable oasis. He was introducing the gold dinar, which would have become the currency of all of Africa. That's why he had to be taken out. He was a threat to the Rothschild banking industry and the Western powers. So he took him out a week before the United Nations was going to present him with a humanitarian award. That's what we've been doing, John.
Right. Well, and see, this is the thing. And Putin is even, you know, he's basically openly saying these things. He's saying, look, American foreign policy is incoherent. It's just in disarray. It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense unless you understand that American foreign policy is really created and formulated and implemented by Jews who have direct ties to Israel. Our foreign policy is totally controlled by Zionists to advance the Zionist agenda in the Middle East.
This is why.
That's very clear. I mean, that's why we're funding and supporting ISIS, who are our enemies in Iraq, and yet they're our allies in Syria.
They're our enemies. We created them, John. Don't be taken in by our own frauds and deception.
Listen to me.
Netanyahu and AIPAC are tearing out their hair because they lost on the Iran deal. And let me tell you how monstrous was this whole Iran thing. It was a complete scam. 16 U.S. intelligence agencies already concluded in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons. They reaffirmed that conclusion in 2011. Even the Mossad concluded in 2012 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, which they reported to Netanyahu 3 weeks before he went to the U.N. and declared precisely the opposite. This has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. Israel has a vast stockpile. Iran has none. Iran doesn't even want them. Iran has signed the non-proliferation treaty. Iran has allowed inspectors. Israel has not signed the non-proliferation treaty. Israel won't allow inspectors. There's a problem with nuclear weapons in the Middle East. It has nothing to do with Iran. The reason this has come up is that Netanyahu wants to preserve the sanctions on Iran so that it can't regain its economic and political influence in the Middle East. That's what's this all about. And do you realize that these sanctions on Iran, like the sanctions on Iraq, are violations of the Geneva Conventions of 1949, where Article 33 states that no individual may be punished for any crime they did not personally commit? These are forms of collective punishment. They affect everyone in the society. Our no-fly zone over Iraq led to the death of 500,000 Iraqi infants. And when Madeleine Albright was asked, was it worth the price, she assured us, oh, yes, it was, as though she had the right to take out 500,000 Iraqi infants. I mean, our foreign policy is a disgrace. It's a lie. It's a fraud. Total hypocrisy. Barack Obama is one of the greatest two-faced liars the world has ever seen. It's disgusting. Even the members of the Nobel Committee now regret they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize because he's obviously not a worthy candidate.
Right. Well, and yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think the only way to understand American foreign policy is to understand the fact that it's really controlled by Jews and by people that have direct ties to Israel. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, is that because really it doesn't make any sense if you stop and think about
it. Well, AIPAC has exerted tremendous power. This was a huge defeat for AIPAC, the most powerful lobby in Washington. Cynthia McKinney was the first to reveal that when new congressmen come to Washington, they're asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel even ahead of those of the United States. If you refuse to do it, then you find yourself opposed by a well-financed alternative candidate. Most don't survive. She managed to survive for 8 different terms. We owe her an eternal debt of gratitude. You got to understand how horrific this is. The very first political speech I ever gave was on 15 April 2008 on the grass outside of the Capitol. It was a Ron Paul Freedom Rally on Tax Day. And I was talking about what would later be published as 9/11 and the neocon agenda. Now we had all these members of the Department of Defense who are joint U.S.-Israeli citizens, and how no joint citizen with another country should be put in a policy-shaping or decision-making position in the United States, because who can know that their commitment to the other nation doesn't overrule their commitment to the United States. They should never have been in that position. They were acting all along, and this is most of the members of the Project for the New American Century, that felt there was a unique opportunity with the demise of the Soviet Union to create a new American empire that would endure for the next 100 years. If only the United States would move aggressively into the Middle East and exert diplomatic and military pressure outward from that geopolitically sensitive area. But they bemoaned that the American people were unlikely to rise to the occasion unless there was some catalytic traumatizing event, such as a new Pearl Harbor, to which they would respond. And they went about arranging 9/11. I documented in spades. If anyone wants to see what happened here, go to The Real Deal, episode 103, 9/11, Who Was Responsible and Why, with Dennis Camino. You can find it online. 2 hours, you get the big picture, 9/11, in a single package.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, we just have a couple more minutes left. What do you think of Putin's moves into Syria and, you know, what Russia's doing right now?
This is so brilliant. I can't begin to tell you. This just reflects, you know, that chess was a national game and creation of Russians. He's so much smarter than the West. What he has done is at a single stroke, he's transformed the geopolitical map in the Middle East. This resolves it. He's come to the defense of Assad. They're attacking ISIS. They're taking him out. It's not going to take more than a couple of weeks, which is going to make Obama look like an idiot because he's been moaning over this for years but doing nothing about it. The Israelis have in the past been doing overflights of Syria. The Russians have gone up to meet them, and the Israelis scampered away as well. They should. They would have lost all four of their fighters. This is absolutely brilliant, genius stuff. He's also sent these batteries of S-300s that are some of the best anti-aircraft missile batteries ever designed by the hand of man. The only ones who have better are the Russians themselves, who have an S-400. These kinds of systems are in both Syria and in Iran, which means that, you know, any plans of Netanyahu to bomb Iran are gone for good. I don't know how many Americans have thought through, but that an attack on Iran, on its nuclear facilities, would have brought about the death of a million Iranians outright, and then as a cloud of contamination swept across Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India, brought about another 35 million premature deaths. That's 36 million. That's six times the 6 million they attribute to the Holocaust. We know that's a fictional figure, but the 36 million is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's and that's what I was alluding to when, you know, Putin is openly saying that, you know, American foreign policy is just a total disaster, and, you know,
it's a stack of cards. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's all built on lies and deception and cheating. Remember, yeah. General Wesley Clark told us that the Pentagon had adopted a plan to destabilize seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya and ending with Syria and Iran. All this was to benefit Israel. That's why they went about bringing us 9/11, was to engage the United States in endless wars in the Middle East to benefit Israel. These haven't benefited the United States at all one iota. It's cost us trillions of dollars, thousands of young men and women. We depleted our military equipment to benefit Israel. I say enough is enough. Enough is enough. Let's put America first and Israel. Give them a kick and the swift behind and put them back where they belong. This has been a tail wagging the dog for way too long, John.
Well, indeed, that's what we've been doing in Syria this whole time. We've been funding and financing and helping this, quote-unquote, ISIS group, you know, to overthrow Assad, and it hasn't worked thus far.
And other terrorist groups.
And now Russia is stepping in to help it, to essentially back up Assad.
Yeah, well, it's done. It's a done deal, I'm telling you. This has permanently transformed the Middle East. It will never be the same. The old routines are all lost. The hypocrisy of the United States has been exposed. Israel won't get anything it wants. The plans for the greater Israel are defunct.
Now, and I should mention that, again, Trump is out there saying that Russian airstrikes in Syria are a positive thing.
And he's right. Of course
he's
they are.
He's praising what Putin is doing.
You see the independence of mind there? Any conventional politician would be complaining about it. You know, the last time around, we had a bunch of Republican candidates who couldn't try to outdo one another as the first who would be attacking Iran. I mean, it was about as disgusting a display as I've ever seen. Rand Paul would be at the top of the pack if he'd only endorsed the Iran nuclear deal. I can't believe he didn't, because he stands for non-interventionist, not getting involved in these foreign affairs. He should have supported the Iran deal. That would have been perfect. Then he could have been the one senator on the stage who could actually declare that he had a sensible foreign policy, whereas none of the others do. Thank God there's Donald Trump there.
Absolutely, yeah. So Donald Trump is out there praising what Russia's doing. Meanwhile, many of the other GOP candidates and Hillary Clinton, I don't know about Bernie Sanders, but I know Hillary Clinton, and you know, many other, you know, sort of establishment politicians and media figures are basically openly calling for war with Russia now. You know, I mean, this is something that's been going on and building up.
Well, it's loopy, but that's the neocons, you know, been trying to provoke this, you know. We spent, what, how many, at least 5 million in the Ukraine to create unrest and to drive the democratically elected president of Ukraine out so we could provoke Russia. Well, it's a very stupid thing to do. Russia is militarily far more advanced than the United States, let me assure you. As a former Marine Corps officer, I tell you, their weapons and their training are far superior to ours. And if we get in a war with Russia, we are not going to be happy with the outcome. We're not going to be happy with the outcome, I tell you. And there's a lot of lunatics who are fantasizing about taking out Russia. That is bizarre. That's ridiculous. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. It's, I mean, these people are totally disconnected from reality. And, I mean, I don't know who's feeding them their talking points, but, you know, they need to fire whoever is, because it is just, you know, it's total madness. These people have no idea what's really going on in the world.
It's a disgrace. And that's very clear. It's people who are promoting the interests of Israel to the bitter end. That's what's going on.
That's true.
You got Victoria Nuland, you got Samantha Power, you got Susan Rice, are all three neocon hawks in key positions in the American government. That's terrible. And that because that is Obama's choice and responsibility, that means he's doing terrible things and misleading the American people about what he's really up to. He's not even straight about where he was born, for God's sake. How could you expect him to be straight about anything he's doing in the world? And his Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to usher in the New World Order. You're going to have a super board of corporate attorneys who are going to be able to overrule the sovereign laws of independent nations, including the Constitution of the United States, John. Anyone who supports the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a traitor to the United States of America, mark my words.
Very well said. I couldn't agree with you more. And that is an issue that American Free Press has been covering extensively. So another reason to support and subscribe to American Free Press. Jim, we're just about out of time. Do you have any final remarks or, you know, any final points you want to make about this very wide-ranging conversation we've had tonight?
Well, I just like to say there are lots of resources out there if you like to think things through. I've mentioned quite a few. My blog, jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. My video shows on The Real Deal, where I've cited several programs that are simply sensational. This book is one in a series. Of saving the world, resisting the empire, that was inspired by Mike Palachuk. And there are two books in the series now. There will be a third on Sandy Hook that should be out by the end of the month. And after that, I'm going to follow it with a book on the Boston bombing and just lay it out so no one can misunderstand what's going on here. Anyone who's interested in a mini introduction to these issues should go on to YouTube and search for The Real Deal Special Sandy Hook Update and The Real Deal Special Boston Bombing Update, and you'll begin to get an inkling and understanding of what's been going on here.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for coming on tonight. I appreciate it. And I'm sure we will be chatting again once the Sandy Hook book is published.
Absolutely, John. I'm delighted. Thank you so much for featuring me.
Okay, sure thing. Yeah, thanks a lot, Dr. Fetzer. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in tonight. I will be talking to everybody soon.